I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
John, we recorded an entire episode of Kevin Hart, and I never once did this voice. Do I get a sausage?
You do. Thank you for not doing. Well, I don't care. If you wanted to do it, it would have been fine. But you're right. Yeah, it didn't come up. That was. You know what? I have to congratulate you, Patrick, because when we have your favorites on the show, you always really keep it in line. You're very aware of fanboying too much.
Uh-huh.
You always do a good job with it.
So I try.
It's
so hard.
It's good. I feel like when we have people that I really like, I just become Chris Farley.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I'm just like, remember that time in the Beatles when you did?
What was that like?
Song? Yeah, that was awesome. I'd love to listen back to the Brandon Sanderson episode because I feel like that was how I spoke to him. Like, yeah, that was. Remember when you wrote Elantris? Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, it's like, you know, talking to Jim Butcher. I didn't get to do an interview at the time with him. I've done one in the past on SF Signal, but I at a writer's conference, I was able to ask him a couple of questions, and just in front of the audience, and I asked him a question, and I asked him a question about his Spider-Man novel that he wrote. You know, How much more freaking fanboy can you get than asking Jim, New York Times bestselling author Butcher, about his freaking Spider-Man book?
It doesn't get much better than that. You're just mentioning, because a bunch of thoughts flew into my head, which is why we don't really plan out these just the two of us, is because they can go anywhere, and that seems to be how we like it. And it ends up being pretty good, but maybe what you had just said reminded me of this article I just read that spoke about Beavis and Butthead and their critique of Creep by Radiohead. I don't know if you remember that song, Creep by Radiohead. So Radiohead went on to be Radiohead. But Creep was their first song, which apparently they don't really ever play live because they got a lot artsier and... I don't have anything against Radiohead. Radiohead is one of those bands kind of like Pink Floyd where it's like, I bet someday I'll get into them, maybe. Whether you like them or not, that's not the point. But when Creep came out, it was very much grunge, that kind of, it fell in line with that like moodier grunge. And this article, I think it was from spin.com, spoke about how Beavis and Butthead's 2-minute critique of that video is perfect criticism of that. It's like perfect music journalism. Because if you're not familiar with Creep, you know, the whole intro and verse is very quiet and it's not rocking at all. And when the first part of that, when they're getting through that, because I guess Butthead or Beavis had heard it before, but Butthead had not. And Butthead is all bored and be like, this sucks. Why is this boring part? He's like, no, it gets awesome. Wait a minute. And then it gets to the heavy, ja-ja, ja-ja. And then, you know, they're like, yes. And then it goes back to the other part. And Butthead is like, why not just make the rocking part the whole song instead of the sucking part? And then Beavis chimes in with, well, maybe you need the suck part to make the rock part rock more. And it's just like, yeah, that's true. That's good music. Sorry, I just made it.
So no, you just reminded me of something else. So that's a song that they don't like to play, right? Because they probably as a band feel that was forced on them, maybe, or that was something that doesn't actually represent them as a band, right? So we talked about Tom Petty a little while ago, and it goes back to, you know, the A&R man doesn't hear a single. So how many bands, and I know that we can name at least one right off the top of your head, John, have had a hit song that they don't like because it doesn't represent the band, right? So More Than Words.
Yeah.
More Than Words is a song that was a huge hit. Everybody loved it. And that is not that band. And that is not what they do. And, you know, people would go out and buy albums and go, what the fuck? Where's my More Than Words kind of songs? There's no more like that, you know, because that's not who they are. Do you remember the song Back to Life by, I believe it was, Soul to Soul?
Yeah.
Back to Life.
Yeah. Back to
Reality. I remember loving that song.
Okay.
And I told my friend, I'm like, I really love that song. And he's like, well, I have the album. I'm like, oh, can I listen to it? He's like, you won't like it. And I said, why not? He says, because I don't know why. He says, but that song, even on the album, it doesn't sound like that. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they changed it up for the single. And then the album version is different. And when you listen to the album, he was right. I didn't like any of the other songs. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a bait and switch kind of thing where they decide to release the single, you know, that's going to get everybody all excited. And then the album doesn't support that single, right? It doesn't bring you home and make you feel like, oh yeah, this is the band that I like because I like that single. And then that you also made me think of Bobby McFerrin.
Oh, sure.
Imagine being a fan of Bobby McFerrin and going to one of his concerts, and the only song he will never, ever, ever, ever play is the one song that you've heard a million times before.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the song?
Yes, Don't Worry, Be Happy, of course.
Don't Worry, Be Happy, yes. Mm-hmm. And he won't play that anymore because he hates how successful it became, and he hated that, you know, everybody was singing it and it just became this pop thing and he just doesn't like it. So he won't do it anymore.
I think what happened with some artists who consider themselves songwriters and their creators, I think at certain points in music history, late 80s, early 90s, well, probably all the 80s for that matter, record companies did get more and more control over what kinds of music they put out and brought in outside writers a lot
to try to get
those hits. And what ended up happening to a lot of those bands is they had huge hits with songs either they didn't write at all, it's just a total outside writer and they were forced to record the song, or they co-wrote it with an outside writer. Either way, it's not a song that they really believed in, but ended up being a huge hit. Right. And so they kind of hate it right from the get-go because it really kind of wasn't their song. There's a million examples. The Flame by Cheap Trick. They didn't write that song. They didn't want to do it. Came a huge hit. They don't play that one live because they didn't write it. They don't like it. It was a huge hit, but they don't care. And happened with Aerosmith. They had a lot of hits that they didn't write, like in the late 80s, especially that Don't Want to Miss a Thing. That was Diane Warren, I believe, who wrote a lot of hits of that time. So I think that happened a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you mentioned More Than Words by Extreme. They wrote that at least.
They did.
And even though that album sounds different, I think they kind of do stand behind that song. Same thing with Mr. Big, who I'm a huge fan of Mr. Big. Their big hit is To Be With You. Even though that's a pretty different song from a lot of the other things on their albums, they stand behind it because they wrote that song. And
sure.
Even though it was sort of, I don't want to say a throwaway song, they didn't have high expectations for that song. It was like, here, this is kind of an acoustic-y, Beatles-y kind of tune. Like, I think the singer wrote it. And they're like, yeah, that's a cool song. I like the Beatles. Let's just lay it down. And they laid it down real quick, and they didn't think much of it, and they didn't think it was ever going to be a single. And, of course, that gets released and it is huge and they stand behind that. And I've read interviews with them where that question is asked, like, well, what do you think about doing To Be With You? It's this big hit. It's not necessarily the other stuff you do. And they're like, we love it. We consider ourselves fortunate that we had a number one single and that we've had a career for the past 25 years because that song was a hit and we'll take it. And we love playing it every night. And I love when artists can feel that way about their hits. Cause you're right. That's not always the case.
Well, yeah. And there was a, I keep going back to the Tom Petty documentary that I watched. There was a scene where a friend of his who had a career in music but was never as big as Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and I forget the gentleman's name, he got a new album deal, and he called Tom and asked him if he'd come and sit in on a couple songs or something. Somehow... he just happened to come in and be in the recording studio with his friend. And they have video of Tom Petty just going off on this A&R guy who's there for his friend's album. And basically what happened was they handed him a song and said, you have to record this song because this is going to be a hit. This is going to be your single. And it didn't, it didn't fit with this musician, didn't fit with who he was, who his music was, anything. And the musician, the artist, was going to go ahead and record the song because the record company is telling him, you have to record this song.
Yeah.
And Tom Petty is sitting there and he goes, it's a hilarious kind of moment because he's looking at this guy and he's going, what the fuck is going on here? Did you write this song? Do you have points on this song? Why are you trying to make him write this piece of shit song or sing this piece of shit song? Why are you doing this? What's in it for you? Because this is horrible. This is a terrible song. Why would anyone ever record this song? And he just keeps going off on the guy. And you could see like his friend is standing behind him, stunned, but at the same time going, holy crap, Tom Petty is fighting for me. Mm-hmm. And he gets it. He gets the song tossed out. He no longer has to record the song. But then Tom Petty feels bad about this. And he calls his friend the next day and he's like, look, I'm really sorry. I kind of took over in your recording and I apologize for that. I shouldn't have done that. That was horrible. And his friend's like, no, no, no. It was a terrible song. I didn't want to record it, but I didn't see any way out. But you're Tom Petty. You can tell them that it's a terrible song and get me out of it. Now I don't have to record it.
It's, you know, this is why art, whether it's songwriting or novel writing or filmmaking or TV, it's why not... When we get great things, a great song, a great album, a great movie, a great TV show, a great novel, we should be very thankful because there is no one way to do it. And great things have come when it's been one solitary genius working on their own without any outside interaction or help. We've gotten great things that way. We've gotten great things by having big teams working on it. We've had great things where an editor or a music exec came in and changed things around and it ended up being fantastic. So the problem is that, well, what is the right way to do it? Well, who knows? That's the point, is that I can give you examples in every medium, in every different way that worked and that didn't work. You know, because... the music point of view, there's all these bands and artists that I still like that they don't have hits anymore, but they go out and tour. And most of them do put new albums out because you can make an album nowadays for very inexpensively compared to what it used to be. They have much less expectation on it because they know it's not going to, they're not going to be hits. What is a hit anymore anyway? Who knows even what that is? But I think they look at making their albums. There's two purposes. One, putting an album out, it's kind of the reverse of the way it used to work. Putting an album out is a way to alert the public that you're going on tour. So they come and see you because they make the money on the tours. It used to be the reverse. You'd go on tour to promote your album. Now you put an album out to promote your tour because then it'll get written up on all the websites and podcasts and magazines and what have you. The other part of making those albums is because many of those artists still need to be creative. They want to keep writing songs. They want to keep making new material. Even if they don't end up playing much of that new album live because they know people want to hear the hits, they may do a song or two off the new album. But someone like me, I love all that new stuff. And the point I'm making is I don't think they're, with a lot of those sort of, we'll say, heritage acts or legacy acts that are putting out albums still, some of that stuff is brilliant, and I don't think there's much record company interaction because a lot of them don't even have record companies. They're putting them out independently because you can. And some of those albums are awesome. They're never going to have hits off of them anymore. But it's a sign of that, hey, if they're kind of left alone to write their own songs and do what they think is right, they're going to make some brilliant music. At the same time, I've heard some of those albums and they're garbage. They're terrible because it's like someone should have stepped in and put that. But I would say more often than not, the stuff that I end up taking an interest in is really good. And I think it works from when you're talking about authors too. Sometimes I think editors will come in and be like, "Hey man, gotta change this up here. It's not working." And again, there's, you know, some authors need heavy editing and some need very little. I don't know. You know, we've talked to a lot of authors. So what's your feeling?
Well, but there's the flip side of there's the very famous story of Stephen King who was upset because he wasn't getting any editing. And he's like, he goes to his publisher, and he's like, you know, what's going on? How come this book didn't get edited? And they said, well, you're Stephen King. And he's like, yeah, I know who I am. Why isn't my book getting edited? And he's like, they're like, well, you're Stephen King. You don't need an editor. And he's like, no, I absolutely fucking need an editor. Mm-hmm. Please edit my books, make them better. You know, so there's also like the perception that once you reach a certain level, you don't need the editing anymore.
Well, look, I think, look, and obviously I'm a huge fan, but look, George R. R. Martin, look at those last two books in the Song of Ice and Fire. Those books are 1,000 pages long and very little happens in those books. And that's because I'm sure, and I don't know the inner workings. This is no, like, I know everybody, we talk to a lot of authors, we know publicists and editors. This is no, I have no information on this. I have no idea how this goes down. However, I think it's probably a similar thing that you're talking about with Stephen King. They probably feel like, oh, you're George R. R. Martin, you're super successful, you know what you're doing. Those books should have been edited more, probably. Like, they probably could have cut those books in half and had them be much tighter and have more of a punch. Look, I still like those books, but, you know, 1,000 pages, not much happening. That's not a great book then, in my mind.
Now, there was something else I wanted to actually talk to you about as well.
Sure.
And ask you if you had seen. I read an article. So we're in October now, and all the new shows are coming back, and all the CW shows are coming back. So Supergirl, The Flash, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow. And I read an article talking about how the premiere episodes of all of those shows are way, way, way down as far as ratings and viewers, right? And some people are saying, is this heralding the end of superhero TV shows? And I have only watched The Flash. I haven't had a chance to watch Supergirl or Arrow or Legends of Tomorrow yet. So I don't. I thought The Flash episode was really good, and I'm not going to spoil it because I know you save them up. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was really good. I don't understand why they would all be down so much as far as ratings. But then you have something like, you know, The Inhumans, which was just a god awful mess and was nearly unwatchable. I mean, I gave up after about 20 minutes in. I want to say I just gave up and stopped watching it. Do you think that we're burned out on superhero stuff?
Yes, probably. And what I mean by that is, especially with the CW stuff, as I spoke about on a episode of Just the Two of Us episode a couple months ago, I saved that because I knew it was all going to be on Netflix 7 days later. And guess what? I'm doing that again. I'm not gonna try to watch it in season. And I think with the CW stuff, as great as it is, I watched it all the summer, loved it. I thought it was all great. You know, I mean, a couple episodes here and there, silly or whatever, but for the most part, all four of those shows I enjoyed very much. I suspect a lot of people maybe are doing what I'm doing, because it is kind of hard to keep up with that many shows. And so a lot of people are like, it'll be on Netflix, it's fine, I'll wait. And so I think that may be why you're seeing the numbers. But I mean, if it's only the first week, maybe that's not a big deal. Maybe they pick up. But I can see that, because that's what I decided. Let me put it to you this way. If we'll use Flash as an example, if it was only Flash and it was still on Hulu where I could watch it week to week, and it was just Flash, if it was just one show to keep up with, I would probably watch it in season. But because it's four shows that I'm going to keep up with, then it just becomes like work to me anyway. It's like, look, TV for me is I want to relax at night. I want to sit down. I want to watch a show and enjoy it. I don't want to be like, oh, I got to keep up with this and I got to keep up with that. Like, that is not the way that I want to approach TV. And there are so many, many, many shows that at this point, I just wait now. There's a couple things that I'm going to watch in season. I'll buy this season of Star Wars Rebels. I'll watch that in season. I tend to watch a couple of the comedies in season. Like I watch Superstore. I watch that in season. I tend to watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine a bit in season. But everything else, especially if it's a drama or, you know, something like something that's 45 minutes as opposed to 22 minutes, there's so many that it's, oh, I'll just get to it. Like I'll just like it'll be on Netflix or it'll be on Hulu and I'll just wait till the whole season's there and I'll just boom, 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 watch it. It's a more enjoyable viewing experience for me. So maybe we're seeing more and more of that. I don't know.
So I've been, I always think about blog posts I want to write and then I never write them.
Oh, same here.
And one of them I've got in my head is called This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing is valid and I get it.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that the way the television networks work is they look at Nielsen ratings plus 7 days for DVR, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And the numbers that I'm quoting, which I haven't actually quoted the actual numbers, but you get what I'm saying. The numbers mm-hmm. that I'm referencing were before DVR numbers. So it was just basically live watching. Okay. And they're super down. I mean, ridiculously down from last year. And even more so from when, like, Supergirl was on CBS. Anyway.
So thus, it's not the DVR numbers and not, like, watching it on Hulu
correct.
Within 7 days.
Those typically aren't even taken into account as far as I'm aware.
No, I think nowadays they will end up counting those. You may not. So
Hulu is counted. I don't believe Netflix is counted.
No, it's
so,
not.
So
no,
here's
it's
the problem.
7 day right. window. I think it's a 7 day window that.
So
they
here's the
count.
Problem. If enough people do what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
the shows will be canceled because no one's mm-hmm. watching them. As far as yeah. the network is concerned, so. That's what always cracks me up and why I say we can't have nice things. Someone tries something, comes out with something, and we shit on it as a community, and then we complain that we're not getting anything. We complain that we're not getting enough shows. We complain that we're not getting enough movies. We complain that we're not getting enough blah. And then when something comes out, we shit on it. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I
so
agree.
The Orville I guess. Is a great example. The Orville launches and everybody goes, oh, what a shitty show. It's all about dick jokes. And Seth MacFarlane is just horrible and we hate him. And this isn't what we wanted and we're not going to watch it. Well, then you're not going to get another show, right? For like mm-hmm. 3 years because Fox is going to say, well, fuck you. We gave you another science fiction show. You didn't like it. And so we're not going to take another chance. And we're not going to spend the money on another science fiction show for a while. That's what typically happens. What?
No, I agree because people were sort of pre-shitting on that before it even came out. And it's funny because from what I've seen, I haven't watched it yet. From what I've seen, people didn't like the first episode, or some people did, it seems like. But it seems like people are kind of warming to it.
Yeah, it's just like any, you know... Never, ever, ever judge a science fiction television show by the pilot.
Right.
Go watch Encounter at Farpoint and tell me that Star Trek The Next Generation is going to be the best show you've ever watched on television. It's not going to happen. It's such right. it's not a great episode. And so right. I think the only person that I know who loved the first pilot slash episode of The Orville was my brother. He thought that was the funniest damn thing he's ever seen in his life. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there going, really?
Yeah.
But as it goes on and as they start to figure shit out and smooth things out, these shows tend to get better. And it's true of almost every science fiction show. The pilots are never that great. And then as they figure it out and as the mm-hmm. writers kind of get into the groove, it becomes a better show. And that's what's happening with Orville.
I feel like the ratings for that have been pretty decent, though. Am I wrong on that, though? I haven't been...
No, I don't know. I haven't looked.
Yeah, I think they've been pretty okay. But you're right. Everybody in... A lot of people in our community were kind of pre-crapping on it. And But then I just started seeing some stuff that it was, hey, you know what? It was pretty good. The second episode, oh, the third episode was better than I expected. You know, I started seeing a lot of stuff like that too. So
they're not afraid to, like old school kind of Star Trek, they're not afraid to dip their toes into controversial subjects or subjects that make people uncomfortable or things that are very relevant to what's going on today. In our world, there was an episode. There's a race of people, and I want to say, it's like the third officer on the ship, the guy that they always give command to when the captain and the first officer leave the ship. His entire race is male.
Okay,
they're all male, but they still can reproduce, and he and his mate have a child, and it's a girl. And there's like a 1 in 1,000,000 chance that they will have, that this species will have a girl. And the entire episode was about how his mate wanted, there's a procedure where they basically change the gender and they make her a male. And his mate wanted it and he didn't. He did it first and then he didn't after the crew kind of said, look, this is fucked up. You can't just do this. And you can't decide, you know, you have to let your child decide for herself. And it hit all those transgender kind of topics that we're talking about these days and talking about gender. And it was a very interesting and poignant episode of Orville. And you're sitting there going, whoa, where did this come from?
Well, I think from what I've heard is that it was, and this happens a lot, that it was kind of pitched wrong at first because it's like, it is Seth MacFarlane, or maybe it wasn't even pitched wrong. Maybe it was just people's expectations were, oh, it's the Family Guy. So it's going to be funny. And oh, it's Star Trek. So it's going to be like Galaxy Quest. And I guess it's much, and again, I haven't watched it, but I guess it's more serious than that. It's more of a kind of a standard sci-fi show with some laughs in there.
Yeah, and they do things like, they do stupid things. There are a ton of dick jokes. You know, they meet an alien and the alien's evil or mean or something. They're like, wow, what a dick. You know, they do that all the time. And there's a crew member. She grew up on a heavy gravity planet, so she's strong. She's stronger than most people in normal gravity. And they keep doing this running gag that is so god-awfully stupid where Seth MacFarlane, Ed, he'll run up and he'll try to open a door or something and the door won't open and he'll step back and say, you want to open this can of pickles or this jar of pickles for me? And then she's like, yeah, and she rips the door open. It happens every goddamn time. And it's stupid. You know, there's stuff like that throughout it. So it has good moments and bad moments. And I just think that to be honest with you, the only reason I'm watching it is because Rose put me on a panel at Mile High Con. Or actually she put me in a moderated piece where I'm moderating a discussion of Orville versus Star Trek Discovery.
Okay. So you have to do your homework as well.
I'm doing my homework and my plan is the weekend before Mile High Con, I'm going to sign up for the free trial of CBS All Access and watch as many Star Trek Discovery episodes as I can.
And apparently that's pretty good. Like the buzz on that has been pretty good. I know it's all screwed up with the way that CBS is rolling it out and you have to get the service and all that, but the early feedback on that has been very good, which I think has surprised a lot of people because it took so long to get to screen and it kind of didn't look that great at first. But from what I've heard from various podcasts and that kind of thing, it looks like people like that so far.
I'm still not happy with the fact that it is set in the JJ Trek universe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a whole deep Star Trek discussion that I can't, I can't really comment much on. I don't really know enough about it, but apparently that's good. I'm glad you brought Star Trek up because it ties back to what you were saying about how the shows need to be watched in order for them to continue being made. And you're right. But that being said, I think things have been and currently are transitioning to where we're moving to a different model for how these shows are made. Now, obviously, you can look at the Netflix originals and Hulu originals and whatever the streaming services, their originals, because obviously they make them, they do their 10 episodes or however many there are, they put them out all at once. And Netflix is very well known for not divulging what their ratings are, because why would they? They're not selling ads, so they don't need to. And I know all it drives anybody else in entertainment crazy that they don't publicize their ratings, because they're like, oh, well, yeah, they said Stranger Things is a hit, but how many people are actually watching it? Like, what is it in compared to whatever? I'm sure Netflix, we'll just use them as an example, has a metric for what the views are and, okay, is this worth continuing making this show? And maybe it's sometimes there's other factors. It's like, well, certain demographics watch it and, you know, people watch it fast and they talk about it a lot online. So that promotes our service more. So there's, I'm sure, a million factors into it. But I think the days of a show having to get live views as the only way for it to continue getting made, I think that is in decline. No, I'm sure it'll keep going for a while. I disagree.
I don't think, because network and cable television are not there yet, and CBS is proving that with Discovery, because you can't go and watch Discovery. You can't binge it because they're releasing one episode a week as if it were network television.
Well, and then you could just do the reverse, which is wait till...
And then it's the same thing. If you wait and you're not watching it every week, why the fuck would they continue doing it? You see, that's their mentality. That's the way their model works. When we look at things like the record industry and the book publishing industry and the television industry, they have these models that are behemoth. Mm-hmm. And it's where all their profits are built into it. And even with CBS All Access, they still have two levels, with advertising, without advertising. You have to pay them to watch commercials.
That, to me, is crazy. And I know Hulu still has that, too, where they'll throw you commercials, too. To me, once you start paying, commercials are out of it. I mean, I guess it makes sense to do it where you keep a lower price just to get people in the door, and you can...
But that's not what they're doing. I mean, their model, their whole profit center is built around advertising. It's like newspapers, and newspapers are now dead, right?
Right.
And they're dead because no one wants to get advertising anymore. You look at Google Chrome and Apple's Safari have both announced that they are going to have ad blocking native. In their browsers now, no more plugins, no more third-party pieces. It's going to be native because they are accepting user trends, and user trends are, we don't want to see ads. They are going to block videos from playing automatically. So there's nothing worse than going to a website and having 12 videos trying to load all at the same time. Right? Because, and news sites are the worst for this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They have so many videos that are trying to play when you go to their site. And so they're going to block those. There's not going to be any more autoplay video. And you have that side of it where they're actually embracing what users are doing. And that's what we all are. We're users. Mm-hmm. And then you have these traditional mega conglomerate kind of things going on over here that aren't. They're kind of going a little bit. They're like, oh, well, gosh, if people are going to watch online, then we'll go ahead and we'll create our own online streaming service and we'll charge for that and make that a new profit center. But you still have to watch our ads because we need that money. And if you don't watch our shows and you don't watch them the way we want you to, then we're not going to make them anymore. I mean, that's just the way they do it.
You're right. I think what's going to happen, though, and it might be a while, might be years, and maybe it's a lot of years, I don't know. But I think most people are going to transition to streaming. I mean, I think there's always going to be a place for live television, for sure, sports and everything else. But... will shake itself out, I think, because yes, right now we're in this space where everybody's like, hey, we'll start our own, and that's fine, but you're already seeing fatigue in terms of subscription, which is why I think the Star Trek thing is a great example, because a lot of people are like, I'm not signing up for that because I want to watch one thing. Like, that's ridiculous. And I because that's the thing, like, what do you compare it to? You compare it to Netflix, you compare it to Hulu, you compare it to Amazon Prime. Netflix, $10 a month, gets you a ton of crap. Same thing with Hulu, same thing with Amazon to a lesser extent. You get so much for your monthly subscription. Well, now you're going to turn around and charge the same thing and get, you know, one fifth or whatever, not even, just a small percentage of what you would get, that the value proposition is not there. So I think what will probably happen is everyone's going to continue trying to launch their own. Some will succeed, some will eventually fail, because like you said, if they don't get enough people signing up for it, they're not going to keep doing it. And there's probably a window for how long they'll try it. And eventually you'll probably see some services combine into a bigger service, or maybe Netflix scoops some things up, or maybe, you know, who knows? I'm not sure how it's going to work, but there is a limit to what people are willing to, how many subscriptions they're willing to pay for, and how much they're willing to do. And I think it's just, this is a transitioning period where a lot of people are moving to where I've been for a while now, where I just stream and I don't have live TV at all. And I'm very happy with that. And I think a lot of people are, and more people are doing that. But, you know, it's still, the business is still shaking itself out, and there will be winners and losers. And to me, I know what you were saying before about, it's like, yeah, they're not going to keep making the shows they want to make. To me, there's too many shows already, so it's fine by me. It's kind of like, look, all right, you know, I don't feel any guilt if I don't watch Arrow in season and it eventually gets canceled. It's like, okay, well, sorry, but I'm not going to watch it in season just to make sure they keep making new episodes. Like, they'll figure it out. They're big boys. Like, you know, they're getting my money one way or the other, because if I watch it on Netflix, I'm paying for Netflix, and Netflix paid to air it. So, you know, I don't feel any guilt about it, but there's so much already that it's, I don't know. I think it's just, it's a turbulent time. You'll see it work itself out, but it may take a while for it to work itself out. That's all. I understand your point of view on it too, and I don't think you're wrong, because they're trying, and unfortunately, some of the companies are not doing a good job with it. It's, you look at how much it costs to do it, and you're like, I ain't doing that. Screw that. And it's hard to get people to pay for something that was free.
Yeah,
I think that's a big problem too. It's that's or that they perceived as free anyway.
But you know, it's kind of funny. One of the complaints that a lot of these content creators have, and is piracy.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of times they create their own problem.
Mm-hmm.
So with Star Trek Discovery, people are pirating it.
Yes.
Because they don't want to pay CBS for the money, you know, the money to get it. And I'm sitting there, and I was talking to a guy in the IT department at work, who was like, he was talking about Star Trek Discovery, and I said, oh, you bit the bullet and you paid for CBS All Access. He's like, no. And I'm going, great. Yeah. So, you know, here I'm sitting here going, oh gosh, on the last weekend before Mile High Con, I'm going to sign up for CBS All Access so I can watch all those shows. And apparently it's already being pirated out there. You know, it's like Game of Thrones. People don't want to pay HBO for Game of Thrones, so it's the most pirated show on the net, right?
I saw someone put out a great little, or they said it anyway. They're like, look, if they made an infographic, and this is where CBS really miscalculated, of people who are fans of Star Trek and people who know how to pirate stuff. If the Star Trek fans are a blue circle and the people who know how to pirate are a yellow circle, that infographic would just be one big green circle. Like, it's the people that know how to do that kind of thing. So if there's someone who's inclined to do it, they're going to do it. And it makes sense.
And when the first J.J. Trek movie came out, I believe it was heavily pirated. Mm-hmm. But the thing was that they were saying that particular fan base will pirate the movie and then will buy a ticket and go see the movie in the theater. And then we'll buy the DVD when the DVD comes out so on and so forth, right? And so, mm-hmm. like, not only will that a huge portion of that fan base pirate the movie because they know how, like you're saying, they will also then support the movie in the theater, buy the DVD when it comes out, because that they are that kind of fan.
Sure. Sure, I know. That's been the case, and they have similar things. I mean, although I don't think music piracy is really what it mm-hmm. was. It's certainly not because of Spotify and everything else. It's just easier to stream it. Just do it that way. But that's what they always discovered. People who pirated a lot of music also were the best customers, right. too, that bought the most music as well. So it's, you know, I don't know. It eventually worked itself out with music. Well, and it still is because, you know, obviously that's a whole other conversation about artist compensation and all that. But they figured, like, hey, man, streaming works. Everyone likes that. Like, let's figure out how to make this profitable and we'll move on from there. And I think that's what you're sort of seeing with TVs to a certain extent as it goes. But it's why it's always interesting to talk about to me because it is in such a state of flux right now. And to me, I think it's getting to a good place. But I think you're going to see some old models die. And these new models pick up steam, and then people will complain that streaming costs too much, and it'll be like cable was, and that'll be another whole thing. But that's it.
Mm-hmm. So the last thing I want to ask you about, John.
Okay.
As we're recording this this week, two trailers dropped, and I'm curious if you've seen both of them. The first one, I'm pretty sure you've watched. It's a little, I believe it's like an independent film. It's called Star Wars: The Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So there's that one. And what's the other one?
Because the New Mutants.
That I haven't watched. Okay. I know that's like a horror trailer,
which,
like,
tripped me out. Yeah.
Yes, and I knew it was gonna be. I'd heard about that, but I have not watched that trailer. But I am interested in that because I was a pretty big fan of the New Mutants comic. But I can't really comment on that. I have watched that Star Wars trailer multiple times every night since it came out. Quick thoughts on it, which I think are not.
Spoiler?
No, they're not spoiler. I did see that one tweet that Rian Johnson was like, look, if you want to go into the movie totally clean, maybe don't watch the trailer because it may, you know.
Yeah, he felt there were spoilers.
Yeah. Okay, so that's fine. But, like, and I thought about that for a second. And I'm like, there's no way in hell I'm not going to watch this because it's like, look, if you live any sort of online existence, it's like people are going to talk about this. And, like, I listen to a lot of podcasts, like Star. It's like, look, people are going to talk about this and I want to see it. I don't care. It can't be that spoilery. They're not going to spoil a whole movie. Again, this is not an original thought. Like, after I watched it for the first time, I really liked the way that trailer was put together. It makes me very excited. I was already very excited about the movie, but I think it looks great. I think it's pretty clear. And again, this is not an original thought. Other people have had this thought too. It's pretty clear there's a lot of misdirection going on mm-hmm. in that trailer. There was in The Force Awakens. If you remember The Force Awakens trailer, we're all led to believe that it's Finn that is the Force-sensitive one. And of course, it turns out to be Rey. Spoiler if you haven't watched Force Awakens yet, but Rey is the Force-sensitive one. And, you know, this trailer has, again, spoiler now for the trailer. If you want to go into Star Wars totally clean, you know, the big reveal is at the end. It's supposed to be Rey and Kylo Ren talking, and she wants someone to show her a place, and he puts out his hand. And, all right, maybe that happens. But to me, that seems like a lot of misdirection. Like, I don't buy that that's actually a scene in the movie. That seems like two different scenes cut together. Like, one is talking to one. Maybe he puts his hand out to her, but I don't know if that's the context in which it is. And I think that's fine. I think I think with Star Wars, you kind of have to do that because you can't give the movie away. Because, look, people are going to see it. You don't need to put the trailer out to get people. Oh, Star Wars is coming out. I had no idea. Like, look, people are going to see it. They don't need to, but you need to give them something. And I think there's a lot of misdirection there. That's my feelings about
They've gotten pretty crafty mm-hmm. with these trailers now. And I feel like it started with Marvel. Mm-hmm. There are some trailers out there for the Marvel movies that include scenes that were never in the movies.
Oh, yeah.
And Rogue One.
Oh yeah,
had Rogue One, scene like that was never in the movie, but it was in the trailer.
a scene. Like half of those trailers, like none of that is in the movie.
So that is very interesting to me that you picked up on that, because I think that there is definitely some shenanigans happening.
Now I don't know if that's where there's stuff in that trailer that's not going to be in the movie.
I think it
certainly could be. That is, again, bringing up Rogue One. A lot of that trailer is not in the movie. A lot of that early footage we saw. Again, we know why, because they had another director come in to help finish it up and reshot and tighten the story and put it in a different way where those scenes don't make sense anymore. And some of it was edited out just for brevity also. But I think it's possible. Who knows? With Rian Johnson and the way that he's going about doing it, he may have shot stuff on purpose to misdirect, you know, because that's the way Star Wars movies are nowadays. You never know. Like, he might have shot multiple takes of a scene where different things happen to purposely misdirect. That's possible. I think it's more of a case of clever editing, where it's like, oh, is Snoke talking to Kylo? Is he talking to Rey? Is he talking to Luke? Like, who's he talking to here? It's made to think that he's talking to Kylo, but maybe he's talking to Rey, or maybe he's talking to Luke, and maybe Luke is talking to, we're made to think that Luke is talking to Rey here. I heard one good where, you know, where Luke is like, I've only seen this raw strength one time, and I wasn't afraid, you know, that whole bit. You know, someone brought up a good point with that. He's like, oh, I don't think he's talking to Rey there. I think he's talking to a Force ghost. I think he's talking to Obi-Wan or Yoda Qui-Gon or somebody. And I'm like, well, that's interesting, or Qui-Gon. And I'm like, that could be it. That would make sense to a certain extent. So to me, I think this is what's been great about the new Star Wars movies, and what was great about The Force Awakens, and what was great about this trailer is you walk away with more questions than answers. And that's a better place to be as a fan. You know, like when with the prequels were the exact reverse. It's like, oh, I didn't really need to know that Boba Fett was a kid from Jango Fett. Like, that kind of ruins a lot of the mystery and the fun. And it's like, I think keeping the mystery is good, because what are we doing? We're all talking about it. We're all like, do you think it's that? I don't know. What do you think? And it, to me, it's like, oh, that's exciting. And I did buy my tickets.
Oh, already. Good. Good for you.
I did buy. I wasn't gonna, because my one friend wanted to take the day off on Friday. He's like, I'm taking off on Friday. Who's with me? And the rest of my friends are all teachers. And we're like, we can't take that Friday off, man. Like, I can't. So I got tickets for the nighttime. I'm going at 6 p.m. on Friday.
I have not gotten a ticket yet, because life is so complicated with everything going on at home. So I don't know when I'll be able to see it.
Well, you know what, though? And this is the reason I almost didn't get it, because I'm like, look, I know it's the showings are going fast now, but you know what has happened the last couple of times? Yeah. They add more showings, they put it in more theaters, so you can get your tickets later. You don't have to be an idiot like me and buy it in October.
For a bunch of people in our community have already done that, so that's fine.
Oh, but the thing, but I did get a little fear from, like, yeah, but I gotta see, because I was gonna wait. I'm like, oh, you know, they had ones for the Saturday, because they had none for the Saturday showings at all by me, and I was like, oh, but they have ones for the next Saturday, and I'm like, I'm gonna wait a week, give me a break, like I'll go again that next weekend, that's fine, but it's like I gotta see it opening, because I didn't get a 3D ticket. Mm-hmm. And I tend to like the 3D stuff, but I'm like, it was like standard, you know, whatever, not non-3D, and I'm like, it's fine, I need to see it that weekend, I don't care, it's, you know,
that's cool. I've got a couple things that you made me think of. One is that with the misdirection, things have changed so much and information flows so freely that a lot of these movies that are being made are struggling to try to keep spoilers from being released and pictures from being released and any kind of details. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that they would do misdirection and kind of change things up in trailers to try to keep it, to keep people talking about it like you're talking, you know, to keep the buzz going. Mm-hmm. And because especially with fan bases like Star Wars and Star Trek, and it's so difficult because we tend to want to see and read and know and have all this information about these things. So it doesn't surprise me at all that they would try to do that, you know, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, and we'll probably close out with this, because
yes,
John said before we started, yeah, we'll make this a quick one.
I think 50 minutes is a quick one.
Someone at work came to me after the trailer dropped and said, you know, asked if I'd watched the trailer, and I said yes, and then said, I have a Star Wars question. And I'm like, okay. And this is not, this person is not, would not be considered part of, you know, our science fiction authorly community whatsoever. Probably wouldn't fit in at any sort of convention, but had a legitimate Star Wars question for me, and said, you know, where does Rogue One fit? I can't figure out where Rogue One fits. And I said, well, what do you mean? Well, I watched it on demand. It just happened to pop up on demand. And I thought, hey, I haven't seen that. I'll watch it. So there's my evidence that this is not a person who is part of our community, because even when Rogue One came out, did not go see it. Waited for it to come on demand.
Right.
And I said, well, it takes place before A New Hope, Episode 4, and ends like an hour before that movie begins. I can't find that movie. What movie is that? I don't know what that is. I said, well, it's the first movie, the very first movie that came out in 77. I thought that was called Star Wars. It was, and then later it became A New Hope, you know, Episode 4, A New Hope. I said, the first three movies that were released was A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. And then Lucas did three prequels, Episode 1, 2, and 3, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith. I said, so if you're doing it chronologically, timeline wise, you would watch those three movies and then Rogue One and then A New Hope, go through those three movies and then watch The Force Awakens and then The Last Jedi. And he's like, oh, that's probably why none of it made sense. He says, because I watched Rogue One and I couldn't figure out, it wasn't a sequel to The Force Awakens. I saw The Force Awakens. And I'm like, yeah, no, it's not a sequel to that. He's like, okay, so I should watch this Star Wars movie, the first one then. And I said, you've never watched Star Wars? No, I've never watched any of those. I said, wow. I watched the prequels. And I'm just sitting there going, how the hell do you get to be as old as you are?
And is he never... like our age? Or
yes.
Is he...
Oh, yes. That's it's like, how have you never seen Star Wars?
Yeah, if you said this guy's 25, I'm like, all right, whatever, I'll give him a pass on it. But
no,
if you're our age and you haven't seen
that, that just tripped me the hell out.
Yeah, that is weird. I always find that very odd when I don't see that. But anyway, all right, well, okay, let's. I can keep going. I was going to keep going. I'm just like, you know what? Let's wrap it up because we'll just keep going. It's fine. But I always enjoy these just the two of us. We always get nice feedback. Thank you for the people that give, because I think a lot of times Patrick and I feel like we're just going off the rails here. And these are the episodes that tend to be commented positively on the most. So hopefully you continue to enjoy it. Yes. Do it again. I didn't hear it. Is that a Doctor Who thing?
That's K-9.
Oh, okay. Very good.
He's agreeing with you.
Yes. Yes.
Yes, we do get lots of great feedback on these episodes.
Yes. So if you do enjoy them, keep giving us the good feedback. Yes. That'll encourage us to more silliness. So, all right.
Yes. And the person that replied, you know, that they were so excited about the Guitar Magazine conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, woohoo.
Yes. Yeah. That was great. I just got back to them. So, cool. All right, everyone. Dig what we do. Consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. If you're already backing us, thank you. If you're not, consider becoming one of our backers. Do a dollar a month, whatever works for you. It helps us out a lot. And so that's it for me. Patrick, anything? You have to look into the future a little bit with this one, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Thanksgiving's coming up, I think. Yeah, American Thanksgiving, you Canadian people, you.
Yes.
American Thanksgiving. Yes, we eat turkeys with a flag on it.
Yes.
I think. Yeah. I don't know.
I use a book at school. The music, the series I use for my general music is a Canadian series, and mm-hmm. the Thanksgiving songs start appearing in the October. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, they just had Canadian Thanksgiving.
Yes, so it always like, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. This is a Canadian
series. And I don't think they call it Canadian Thanksgiving. Like, they don't call it Canadian bacon.
No, I don't.
They just call it bacon.
Yes.
Or possibly ham.
Right.
I'm not sure how that works.
I don't either. Crazy conundrum.
I'm sure that there are Canadian people who could tell us how these things work.
I did.
And what it's all about.
A boot. Yes. All right. All right, everybody. Well, have a great week. Patrick, you. Oh, thank you. don't sound. All right, everyone, have a great week. We will see you next time.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.